Many things impact a compliance program, how it runs, and how well it works. But nothing has the same impact as the constantly changing and evolving technology landscape. In ComTech, a podcast on the intersection of technology and compliance, co-hosts Tom Fox and Valerie Charles will help you understand what changes in technology mean for your compliance program. Here's your hosts, Tom and Valerie.
Hello, everyone. This is Tom Fox, together with Valerie Charles, back for another episode of ComTech podcast on the intersection of compliance and technology. Today, we have with us Charles Schwager. Charles is the Chief Compliance Officer at Waste Management. So first of all, Charles, welcome to the podcast.
Well, thanks for having me, Tom. I'm happy to be here.
So in an unfortunate spoiler alert, I told everyone what your title was, but perhaps could you tell us a little bit about really what your role is at Waste Management and why I think it's one of the most unique CCO roles in compliance around?
Yeah, I'm the Chief Compliance and Ethics Officer for Waste Management. We're about 50,000 employees. We're largely a North American company. We have a fairly large deskless employee staff, and so we've got a lot of diversity up and down, you know, our company. We kind of look at compliance holistically. So I work with all of the different groups, whether it's safety, environmental, employment practices, business practices, our international activities that we have, our fraud, our internal audit group. And we are kind of all partnering together to create a very strong and comprehensive culture of compliance and ethics. So we try not to have one area where it's strong and others where it might be different. So we really do try to make it collaborative, holistic, and, you know, a lot of teamwork involved that goes into that.
Charles, one of the things that I think makes your position in Waste Management so unique is not only do you have a very large number of employees, but a large number of them are not in the office. They're out driving routes or doing work. And does that present additional challenges for you in terms of communications or reporting?
Yeah, I think from this workforce was very different from where I came from. And I quickly learned that it is much tougher to communicate with our field, and, you know, how we train the field is different. And so we put a lot of things in place and we continue to put in place to help with that two-way communication loop. We have created an app that our deskless employees can use. We do separate training that's more conducive to them and their workday, as opposed to someone who can sit in front of a screen for 30 minutes and take a training. And we're continuing to try to drive that relationship and dynamic. We're doing a safety survey. We're partnering with I'm co-chairing that with our head of safety. And we're going to do for the first time a survey for that group. And we're using technology to facilitate that based on tablets that they have in their trucks or in the shops and other places. And so we're excited about trying that and see how that turns out.
Charles, I wanted to turn to a project that you did with your team last summer. We're recording this in May of 2021, so this would have been perhaps at the height of the pandemic, but certainly well into it, where you asked your compliance team to look at reporting data and perhaps see if there were some new or different insights you might be able to gain from that data. Could you describe the process you and your team went through?
Yeah, so, as you know, there were really two major events from last year, you know, COVID being the first one, and then the social injustice that, you know, happened during the summer. And our workforce and kind of the way we're structured throughout North America really is somewhat reflective, you know, of society. And so as I was sitting kind of reading the paper and watching the news on COVID and kind of the issues and concerns that were coming up, we quickly saw those start to come through our helpline. And when we saw that, we decided to create a special triage process around that so we could get out in front of that as quickly as possible, knowing that if it's happening in one place, it could be happening in others. So we partnered with our people group in order to set that up and to keep the SLT and the board, you know, aware of that. And what we did when we categorized those kind of as a COVID safety kind of matter, we would then go in and break it out to kind of see what the specific buckets were, you know, under there. And then we would track those buckets and whether we were substantiating them and how quickly we were getting to them. And we kind of got in a cadence with our senior leadership team and the board, you know, to report back on that. And so that, you know, worked well. And then as the social injustice, you know, really took hold and was creating a lot of problems in our society, we started to see that manifest in our helpline And we created a similar process around that. So really kind of tracking whether we were seeing an uptick on our discrimination, harassment, our social media cases, and kind of making sure we were being consistent in our approach to that and really kind of watching those areas. We did that informed training we would do and communications, you know, that were going out around those topics and areas too. So we were fortunate to kind of be on top of our helpline and utilize it in different ways like that. And it, the technology worked well for us to have visibility and be able to react to those things.
Charles, I wondered if you could give a few words about the collaborative nature of the way you run your compliance team. And I've heard you describe it that sometimes you'll give an assignment and ask them to kind of fill out the parameters, or sometimes they will come to you with ideas. But could you give a few words about how you view your leadership for your compliance team, not as the CCO for the company?
Well, I think that I'm a believer in structured collaboration, I guess is the term of art I've come up with. We have a lot of compliance and ethics committees for safety and for environmental and for employee, all those areas that I mentioned in the front. We have cross-functional, cross-departmental committees that meet quarterly and, you know, have set objectives and written agendas and minutes, and really try to make sure we're staying on top of, you know, changes in the law, looking at our data and make sure we're doing the proper risk assessment around that. And, you know, that's really how we work. So it's only as good as everybody working together and getting that buy-in. And it's not something that happened overnight, and it takes time to put together and take hold. But I think the spirit around it has been strong in the company, and the leadership team has wanted that. And so, you know, I think it's been beneficial, but it's like everything, it's a journey and a work in progress. And so it's something, you know, we stay on top of, you know, all the time. But I'm a big believer in operationalizing compliance. I know that's a buzzword. People have different meanings around it, but we really are trying to get as many people formally involved in the compliance and ethics program so we can build from there.
Charles, you mentioned when looking at reports that came in regarding the social justice movement from last summer that you made sure you were on top of looking at any claims that may have come in and consistency in your approach. Were there any other improvements or even changes you made based upon the data that came in either around coronavirus or the social justice movement?
I think we did a lot of selective analysis around those two topics. COVID, we're hoping, is a one-off. It's lasted a long time. So we've pulled kind of our pure COVID cases. We track them, but we pulled them out of our overall numbers so we can do more of an apples-to-apples comparison. If someone makes a COVID claim or has a COVID case but has other issue types, then it gets lumped in with those issue types and we evaluate it accordingly and track it. The social media, you know, issues became more prevalent and we were watching that and had to react accordingly. So that was really kind of the focus, you know, around that.
Just to pick up on your commentary about operationalizing compliance, I'd be curious just, you know, in the spirit of ComTech, to understand, you know, how you did that, sort of incorporating data and tech solutions kind of from the outside with software vendors, or did you do a lot of building internally? I'm curious about the nuts and bolts.
It's a risk-based compliance and ethics program. And, you know, you're trying to identify your risk, continuously improve, be proactive. But when we have these committees and we have these compliance and ethics forums with the area leadership teams, we have 16 major subsidiaries. And so we have a kind of a communication loop we established in them. We're always looking at them, you know, and meeting about our data. We've had a couple of major compliance and ethics perception surveys, and we tend to slice and dice that data and kind of look at that from the view of the area that would be most interested in how their employees are responding versus, you know, other employees in other areas, you know, or the company. And then for these various committees, we'll look at the data that's relevant to those committees, whether it's fines and penalties or environmental claims and things around our environmental committee, or, you know, in the employment practice committee, looking more at the, you know, the helpline data. So that's really how we're trying to use the technology around the reporting. It takes a lot of time, but to get reporting and PowerPoints and processing and present the information in a way that can be meaningfully reviewed by these, you know, other groups and responded to.
Interesting. What about kind of current challenges with return to work? I know a lot of people right now are going through a process of everybody readjusting, I guess. Is that affecting your business?
Well, I mean, we had a lot of our employees that have been working the whole time. I mean, you know, more than half of our employees. So for them, it's, you know, they've adjusted and done a great job. That, you know, it's easy to stay home and kind of do that, but they've been on the front lines and, you know, they're essential workers. And, you know, we're, you know, obviously very proud of their effort. And then we're rolling back in, you know, to the office now, like, you know, others, and having to work on the social distancing and the mask rules and do those kind of things. You know, I think from a technology standpoint, when we did the code of conduct training this year for our people that have our WM emails and network access, we prepared as much as we could, but we had a fair amount of videos in there and things like that. But when people were having to go through the VPN or they're accessing it at different points in time, it, you know, it can pressure the system. So we had lessons learned around that and made some adjustments kind of in midstream to make it easier for people to take that with less buffering and stuff like that. So that'll be different once, you know, people get back to work and are, you know, more in the office setting. But the, you know, the company, again, did a great job getting everyone home and getting them equipped with the right technology to be able to work from home. And so it really was amazingly seamless. There was hiccups, obviously, but, you know, I think everyone adjusted pretty well. And now everyone will adjust to those that have been out, including myself, you know, adjust to coming back to the office.
Did you guys see, we've heard a lot of clients having kind of a big uptick in reporting, which is kind of odd. I mean, I would think with, you know, a certain percentage of your workforce at home, you know, you might have fewer, you know, whistleblower matters, or at least kind of HR type whistleblower matters. But I'm hearing actually that there's been an uptick. Have you guys seen that trend as well?
Yeah, I mean, we did not have a quiet year on the helpline. In fact, I think we had more year over year. So, you know, I think they changed a little bit in kind of what we were seeing. But again, you know, we had maybe 70% of our workforce out working. So it didn't impact it as much as you think. And then we had these other, you know, issue types that, you know, became more prevalent during COVID and kind of a different sense around that.
So with those sort of the COVID crisis, I guess, did you just get the typical run-of-the-mill, you know, health and safety, so-and-so's not wearing a mask, that type of thing? Or maybe I was wondering if you have sort of anything particularly unique given your business.
Like I said, we were tracking the kind of the bread and butted COVID ones, but we were pulling those out. And so even pulling those out, we had more year over year than we had in 2019. So it just was more kind of a continuation of what we see. We really focus on a strong, what we call a speak up, listen up, follow up culture. It's something mm-hmm. we promote all the time. We're fairly active and appear to be ahead of the benchmarks and our employees utilizing that. In addition, on our helpline, things that come in directly through people and other groups get proxied into our system. So we're not tracking mm-hmm. just stuff that comes in through the Integrity Helpline, either, you know, called in or website. So I think that you're always getting more because I think we really do focus on it. We focus on it with the leaders. We promote it. So I think that that kind of keeps the pump primed on that.
So just sort of thinking ahead, you know, 2025 and beyond, I think there are a lot of people who believe that the compliance function is going to look very different and that this data analytics push right now is really going to transform compliance. And then there's other people who say, you know what, it's great that we're getting a little more sophisticated and a little more predictive and a little less reactive, but it's really, it's fundamentally the same thing. I mean, I'm curious about your thoughts of whether or not data analytics is truly going to transform what we do as compliance professionals.
Well, I'm trying to get through 2021, Valerie. So 2025 seems a long way off. So if I make it that far, I'll call you. But in the last 3 years, and I've told Tom this before, you know, I really didn't give a lot of thought to data, you know, 3 or 4 years ago. And now I'm always thinking about data. Now, mind you, I went to law school because I'm not good at math. So it's a struggle for me to kind of get my hands around it. We spent a lot of time as my team, and they're really, you know, we've hired people with that skill set. It's an important skill set, I think, to have now. And they really do a great job, you know, digging through it, putting it together. But we're always challenging each other, you know, how can we present it? What are we seeing? What's actionable? You know, there's data that exists and data that you create. We try to balance that out. Obviously, the helpline data is something that we get. We do a lot of surveys. We do a lot of feedback surveys. We're very active looking at our training data. when we're sending out an email on a program, we use banana tag and we see how many times people open it and when they open it and whether they're hitting on the link. So I'm always looking for more information to inform kind of what we're doing. I'm not one to kind of overplay it. If you really don't understand the data, it can create situations where people extrapolate or make conclusions that I think are faulty. And so I think that's where I get a little, I'm using the data. I think it's an important part, but I think it has its limitations too. I think you can get too much data, you know, overwhelmed by the different things. And so you've always got to kind of step back and see really what are you using it for? What's actionable? What are you trying to accomplish? And it does frustrate me sometimes when people want to take data and I think make too much out of it. And then you start asking questions about the data and you realize that that might be a stretch. So we try to be reasonable about what we're seeing and kind of how we're, you know, responding to it.
Interesting.
But I think, you know, to answer your question on 2025, I don't think that data analysis is going to go away. I got kicked off the program I was on with Tom the other day, so I didn't get to hear it, you know, hear it all. But, you know, a little bit about the data really kind of depends on your what your role is as a chief compliance officer, or just in compliance in general. And I think that, I mean, I can get access to anything I need to get access to, but, you know, I have heard chief compliance officers or compliance people going, well, I can't get access to that data. They won't provide it to me. But I think that kind of goes back to what is your role? What are you trying to do with the data? You know, what are you trying to accomplish with it? How does it impact the scope of your position? So I haven't gotten into the AI world. I know that's probably next step, you know, taking different data streams and assimilating them and trying to come up with stuff. You know, we're looking at that, but I think I'm always going to be limited by my technical background. So maybe, you know, I'll stay further away from the hole on some of that stuff, but I think it'll grow, but I think the industry has to be careful on overdoing it with the data and trying to read too much in and forgetting about the qualitative things and kind of really what, you know, the data is telling you.
No, these are really good points. And I agree with you wholeheartedly. It's going to be interesting to see where this all goes. Thanks so much for chatting. I really enjoyed this. I always enjoy chatting with you.
And I do with you.
So Charles, it seems to me that you made the really salient point and case that you really have to have the human element involved as well. You've talked about how you've used data, but you've also articulated the qualitative approach that you and your team bring and have brought to this and how that you will continue to do that going forward. Unfortunately, we are near the end of our time for this episode, but Charles, on behalf of Valerie Charles, partner at StoneTurn, and myself, Tom Fox, I wanted to thank you and hopefully we can continue the conversation.
Looking forward to it. And thanks for having me on. It was a pleasure to talk to both of you.